This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Still counting. Good morning. I'm Mike Gavin, in for Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It's Friday, November 11th, 2022, Veterans Day, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Ballots are still being counted in some states around the country as control of the House and Senate still up for grabs.
A federal judge delivers a big blow to President Biden's student debt relief plan.
Stocks soared after inflation showed signs of easing.
And the rise of the dad sneaker.
There are luxury brands that are making their own version. You know, Balenciaga's a big one. Gucci as well, making these kind of larger sized, often pre-dingy, pre-distressed shoes that look very similar to what a dad would mow the lawn in.
Wall Street Journal fashion columnist Jacob Gallagher with more on how dad fashion is ending up on young people's feet. That's coming up later this hour. Republicans remain on track to tip the House majority in their favor, but Senate control is still undecided as analysts watched incoming ballots for clues as to whether Democrats could gain the upper hand in that chamber and split the legislative powers between the two parties. In the House, with 32 contests still up in the air, with 211 wins already, Republicans needed only to win 7 more to claim a House majority. In the Senate, Republicans had claimed 49 seats compared with 48 for Democrats and would need to win in 2 of the 3 remaining states, Arizona, Nevada, and Georgia, in order to win a majority. Much of the focus has been on Arizona, where slow vote counting has frustrated many, including gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake. But Bill Gates, the chairman of the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors, says they're working as fast as they can.
It is offensive for Carrie Lake to say that these people behind me are slow rolling this when they're working 14 to 18 hours. So I really hope this is the end of that now. We can be patient and respect the results when they come out.
As of last night, Ms. Lake was trailing Democrat Katie Hobbs, the Secretary of State, by just over 1 percentage point. A federal judge in Texas ruled that President Joe Biden's plan to cancel hundreds of billions of dollars in student loan debt was unconstitutional and must be vacated, delivering a victory to conservative opponents of the program. More from this morning's Dave Duncan.
U.S. District Judge Mark Pittman, an appointee of former President Donald Trump, ruled in a lawsuit backed by the Job Creators Network Foundation on behalf of two borrowers. The debt relief plan had already been temporarily blocked by a federal appeals court. The Biden administration can appeal the verdict, and officials told the Wall Street Journal they've been discussing both the legal and policy responses to a ruling like this. Mike?
Thanks, Dave. The lawsuit is one of several brought by Republican officials and conservative groups. President Biden's political advisors hoped the promise of student debt relief would drive young voters to the polls, and some young people said the issue influenced their vote in Tuesday's midterm elections. Tropical depression Nicole was moving through Georgia this morning after a day of causing havoc as it churned through Florida as a hurricane and then a tropical storm, leaving tens of thousands of homes and businesses without power. The National Hurricane Center said the rare November hurricane could dump as much as 6 inches of rain over the Blue Ridge Mountains today. Flash and urban flooding will be possible as the rain spreads into the eastern Ohio Valley, mid-Atlantic, and New England through Saturday. The storm proved deadly in Florida as 2 people were killed by electrocution when they touched down power lines in the Orlando area. Governor Ron DeSantis.
This is obviously not as significant a storm as Hurricane Ian was, but coming on the heels of that, you're seeing communities, particularly in the Volusia County area, where you had a lot of that erosion on the coastline. You know, this has put some of those structures in jeopardy.
As of this morning, just over 50,000 customers were without power in Florida due to Nicole, with 15,000 more in North Carolina.
Why wait to save? Dell Technologies' Black Friday event arrives early with select deals on top tech to power business productivity. The savings start now with up to 48% off performance business PCs powered by 12th Gen Intel Core processors. Don't forget special pricing on the latest monitors, docks, and accessories, including free shipping on everything. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL for Black Friday deals. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Gordon's off. I'm Mike Gavin. Thanks for coming by on this Friday. On the heels of a mostly feel-good week for President Biden, he now faces some thorny challenges on a major overseas trip that begins today, where he will try to balance climate concerns with a desire to see oil production output increases from countries like Saudi Arabia. He's also scheduled to meet with Chinese President Xi Jinping, among other stops. More now from Guy Taylor, National Security Team Leader for The Washington Times. Guy, what's the president looking at here?
President Biden arrives Friday in Egypt, where he's going to the COP27 UN climate summit that's been going on this week. This is the first stop of basically a big week-long trip that over the weekend we'll see Biden in Cambodia for a meeting of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN. Then he's headed to Indonesia early next week for the big G20 gathering of leaders from basically the 20 wealthiest countries in the world. And the spotlight will be on the G20, where Biden's probably going to be meeting for the first time as president with Chinese leader Xi Jinping. But also there's speculation that Russian President Vladimir Putin might also show up at the G20, although right now it seems like he's not coming. Either way, the Ukraine war, really Russia's 8-month-old invasion, and the U.S.-NATO-led attempt to rally the world's democracies to financially and militarily aid Ukraine, that's going to be an issue that will hang over the whole G20. This is the first time we've had a G20 summit since the Russian invasion began. And remember, the G20 is really a kind of like about optics more than anything else. It's a moment where the world's most powerful leaders are all in the same place at the same time.
We're speaking with Guy Taylor, National Security Team Leader at the Washington Times. So, Guy, with these summits often comes global leader posturing. How does Biden fit into that?
Yeah, well, this is interesting because Biden is going to celebrate his 80th birthday when he returns from this trip later in November. And I think there are questions among world leaders about whether or not at this kind of politically exhausting moment in the United States, whether or not President Biden really has the energy to be this sort of world leader figure and travel to three different destinations over the course of a week for three major summits and then pull off what would be a kind of coup de grace of some sort of the U.S. is the most powerful narrative leading, discussion leading country at the G20 with President Biden out in front steering the conversation around basically vilifying the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Can he pull that off? And the stakes are pretty high. I think he has an opportunity here. It's not uncommon that sitting presidents who are facing midterm elections will, right after those midterms, go on an international trip and sort of get away from the domestic political fray, so to speak. And I think that's part of what Biden's doing. But the stakes are also higher in a Xi Jinping-Biden meeting because there are other issues there that have to do specifically with Chinese military muscle flexing in East Asian waters, friction between China and Japan. But most specifically, and this will factor into this ASEAN summit over the weekend, is the issue of China's sort of aggressive push towards Taiwan in recent months. And there's a question there about whether or not Biden will openly talk about the Taiwan-China tensions during the trip. And will he actually reach out and sort of ask any of these smaller ASEAN nations whether they might more openly stand in supporting Taiwan against the threat of a potential Chinese or a military invasion by the Communist Party-ruled government of mainland China.
So what about when it comes to money for Ukraine?
When it comes to overall support, military spending, humanitarian aid, financial support to keep the Ukrainian economy from totally cratering, that's really all coming from the United States, the vast majority of it. And there are promises from the EU. Several of these big EU countries, specifically Germany, are major G20 members. Germany's the biggest economy in Europe. So these leaders are all going to be there at the G20. Many of them are. And it presents Biden with a kind of an opportunity behind the scenes to sort of say, hey, look, are you really going to start paying up or not?
All right, thanks, Guy. Guy Taylor, National Security Team Leader at The Washington Times. 20 minutes now after the hour. Here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Nicole made landfall as a Category 1 hurricane in eastern Florida yesterday, causing at least two deaths, knocking down some homes and cutting off power for hundreds of thousands of customers. Jeff Brooks is with Duke Energy.
Absolutely plan to use all of our technology in this storm. That helps our crews in the field restore power faster to be able to make sure that power has properly been restored.
Meanwhile, the storm may have unearthed a Native American burial site dating back hundreds of years. Six skulls and other small bones turned up on Chastain Beach on South Hutchinson Island. Authorities believe the bones are at least 200 years old and may be the remains of indigenous people. The bones of Native Americans were discovered in the area after Hurricane Sandy in 2012 and Hurricane Dorian in 2019.
Number two.
Republicans remain on track to tip the House majority in their favor, but Senate control is still undecided. In the Senate, Republicans have claimed 49 seats and would need to win in two of three remaining states, Arizona, Nevada, and Georgia, in order to win the majority.
Number three.
Stocks soared to their biggest gains in more than 2 years after better-than-expected inflation data reignited bets the Federal Reserve would slow the pace of interest rate increases. The Core Consumer Price Index rose 6.3% in October from a year ago, less than expected. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
We are seeing some strength, and it continues to grow. And we are put in a situation to manage our economy through these global challenges.
The Dow Industrial surged 1,201. The NASDAQ jumped 761. President Biden left Washington yesterday for a global climate meeting in Egypt. His attendance at the UN conference is the first stop on an around-the-world trip that will also take him to a meeting of Southeast Asian leaders in Cambodia and a group of 20 meeting for leaders of the world's largest economy in Bali. A section of the Space Shuttle Challenger was found on the ocean floor more than three decades after it exploded moments after liftoff, killing all seven crew members. NASA says the 20-foot shuttle piece was found in March by a dive team working off the Florida coast as part of a History Channel documentary.
That is amazing. It reminds me of when, I guess, they discovered the Titanic decades, you know, after it had sank. It's amazing to just sit there and all of a sudden we come across these kind of things.
37 years later.
Unbelievable. Thanks very much, Jen.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
You know, we're still counting votes in some places, and the full implications of the midterm elections won't be known for a while, but we can take a sneak peek at how the elections could affect our finances. For that, we bring in Andrew Keschner, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch, and focus this hour on stocks and investing and housing costs. Andrew, a lot of people certainly voted hoping for some relief in their wallets, didn't they?
We're living through four-decade high inflation rates right now, you know, stuck around for many, many months. And that's top of mind. And so they brought that to the ballot box and, you know, thinking about which candidates could best give that price relief potentially. And there's actually specific ballot measures in some states that really got at cost issues and affordability issues.
So let's start, if you will, with stocks and investing. What scenarios are we looking at there?
Typically, history says that the markets like divided government, you know, where one party controls Congress, one party controls the White House. And, you know, I mean, really, because that's things move a lot slower. If laws pass, it kind of takes longer to go along, and hopefully there's compromise, the companies and markets can plan for all the new changes and law changes and tax laws and regulations that might come with those changes. So they like that. And I think some of that was reflected in Wednesday afterward, where, you know, we have all of these toss-ups and there's, you know, maybe we're going to divide a government, but there's this uncertainty and markets don't like uncertainty. So on the one hand, yeah, you have the prospect of divided government, markets like that. On the other hand, don't forget all these other massive issues we've got, like rising interest rates, the question of if we're going to go into a recession at some point. A lot of people think that's the case. And then let's not forget this brewing drama with FTX. So we have all of these things that are pulling down portfolios regardless of politics.
And we know that housing costs have gone up nearly across the board and renters have been hit especially hard. Talk a little bit about the rent control measures that were passed.
So there were a couple of those all across the country, like one in Orange County in Florida. It sounds like it's getting tangled up in some legal challenges, but there were nearly 60% of voters in Orange County were approving an ordinance that would limit the rent increases to 9.8 for a year. But then there's a Florida court challenge to that. We'll see how that shakes out. But it looks like there was the other one in Portland, Maine, and they had a referendum that would allow landlords to implement only a standard annual rent increase of 70% on the rate of inflation instead of the 100% rate of inflation. Another vote in Pasadena on this. It sounds like it's last checked. It's still close. But, I mean, this is very much top of mind.
All right. Thanks very much, Andrew. Andrew Keschner, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch. By the way, make sure to follow us on social media, including our newly updated Instagram page. Occasionally, you'll find a Gordon Deal pick or two up there. You can find that at This Morning with Gordon Deal on Instagram. Just about 30 minutes after the hour now, you're listening to This Morning, America's First News.
Want to eat healthier, but every supplement you've ever tried seems like the better it is for you, the worse it tastes? Then you have to try AG1 from Athletic Greens. I started taking AG1 because I wanted more energy and better gut health. What I didn't expect, the taste is better than any supplement I've ever had. I drink it, like it says, before anything else when I wake up. I guzzle those 8 to 10 ounces before my coffee and start my day knowing I've already gotten the recommended daily intake of all the good fruits and veggies. There's definitely a mental boost knowing you've started the day off on the right foot. I tackle the day now with more confidence and energy. AG1, by the way, is not only lifestyle friendly, it's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself. Try AG1. I love this product. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/Gordon to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/Gordon.
An all-star team of the world's best journalists bring you the facts each and every morning. This is America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
34 minutes after the hour, Mike Gavin in for Gordon Deal on this Friday, November 11th, Veterans Day. Here's some of the stories we're following for you today. Ballot counting continues more than 2 days after polls closed. President Biden's student debt cancellation plan is struck down as unconstitutional. Tens of thousands still without power across the South as Nicole continues to dump buckets of rain. 401ks got fatter after inflation eased in October. Elon Musk orders all remote workers back to the office at Twitter. Panthers over the Falcons on Thursday Night Football, and a look at some of the history behind Veterans Day. We'll look at that in about 20 minutes. As hopes for a sweeping red wave faded Tuesday night, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis emerged as a clear winner among Republicans, winning his re-election in resounding fashion. That puts him on a potential collision course with former President Trump, who has already started to take jabs at DeSantis as the two seem destined to square off for the GOP nomination in 2024. More on how that could play out from Brett Samuels, White House reporter at The Hill. So, Brett, explain the dynamic between the two now, after things seem to go in the opposite direction for them on election night.
The Republicans in general kind of had, I think, what could fairly be described as sort of an underwhelming or disappointing night overall. You know, they didn't have the big sweeping wins in the House or in the Senate races that they were expecting. But one very clear bright spot was in Florida, and that was largely because of Ron DeSantis, the governor, who really just coasted to a re-election win by about 1.5 million votes. He flipped Miami-Dade County, which is traditionally voted Democratic in these gubernatorial races, but he carried that county. Palm Beach County, another one that traditionally has voted for the Democratic candidate, went for DeSantis this time. So there's really a commanding performance on his end. He approved the redrawn map that sort of helped give Republicans a couple more House seats in Florida. So where Republicans maybe had sort of an underwhelming night, Ron DeSantis really had a very convincing performance that definitely, I think, essentially persuaded maybe people who were on the fence that he could definitely be a viable candidate in 2024 if people are looking for an alternative to Donald Trump.
And on the contrary, some candidates that were endorsed by President Trump did not do as well, perhaps hurting his standing.
For sure, yeah. You know, Mehmet Oz in Pennsylvania is sort of the most clear example where Trump endorsed him in a crowded Republican primary field, and that endorsement really kind of elevated him and carried him over the finish line to make him the candidate, and then he lost in the general election. So, people certainly sort of second-guessing that one. Trump-backed candidates in races for governor in Michigan and Wisconsin came up short and lost those races to incumbents, and we're still waiting on results in Arizona, where the Senate and governor candidates in Arizona were both backed by Trump and really tied themselves closely to Trump. So depending on the outcomes there, that could either, be in the win column for Trump or another sort of setback. And people who say, it's time to move on from Trump and people he endorses are not electable in general elections. So a lot is still riding on Arizona for Trump, I think. But the initial returns are not great for him.
And we've already seen Trump bristle at the thought of being challenged by DeSantis, rolling out unflattering nicknames and even hinting that he has some damaging information on DeSantis that he could release. Is there a chance those kind of tactics could backfire since Trump and DeSantis share a lot of the same base of voters?
Yeah, it's an interesting strategy for Trump to be going after DeSantis so early, before either of them has really clearly said they're going to run for president or anything like that. I think it's sort of a sign that maybe Trump is aware that DeSantis is gaining some momentum and feels like he needs to kind of push back on that early. But the reaction has been interesting. I think a lot of Republicans who are looking to move on from Trump and maybe see DeSantis as their preferred alternative, I think those Republicans are sort of uncomfortable with or not really a fan of Trump going after DeSantis like this. So, on the one hand, I think it's a preview of sort of the mudslinging that might be to come in a potential primary and a warning from Trump to others, that he's willing to get down and dirty. But on the other hand, I think it's also a sign that, it might not work as well as it did in 2016 when he was able to sort of go after his opponents and use these nicknames. Republican voters may not go for it quite as easily this time around.
And we've already seen a lot of Republican strategists say that maybe it's time to move on from Trump. Does that also have to be done with care so as not to alienate Trump's loyal fan base?
Yeah, it's definitely a tricky line to walk. We've seen however many number of times in the last 6 or so years, we've seen stories where people suggest, this is sort of the end of Trump's hold on the Republican Party, or people might break away for this reason. But he's retained that hold on the party that whole time, despite, however many controversies.
All right. Thanks very much, Brad. Brett Samuels, White House reporter at The Hill.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
This business update is brought to you by Indeed. Make the hiring process work for you. With Indeed's end-to-end hiring solutions, you can attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Start at indeed.com/credit. One of the more sought-after sneakers of the moment look like something your uncle might wear to mow the lawn. More on the rise of dad sneakers from our own Gordon Deal.
We're speaking with Jacob Gallagher, men's fashion columnist at the Wall Street Journal. His story is called, the hot shoe right now is called a dad sneaker. What do dads think about that? All right, so kind of set that scene first and the whole dad sneaker thing.
So this dad sneaker thing, it's not, you know, it's not a brand new concept. We've kind of been sitting in this in the men's fashion and the kind of broader fashion world for, I'd say, probably 5 or so years, actually probably a bit longer than that. We've been in this mode where blocky, large, kind of grayed out sneakers have been quite popular. And we've kind of been facing this wave of both an appreciation for those kind of old school athletic brands that make a very kind of traditionalist, again, like gray and white shoe, New Balance, Asics, things of that nature. And there's both that kind of appreciation for those, and then there are luxury brands that are making their own version. You know, Balenciaga is a big one, Gucci as well, making these kind of larger sized, often pre-dingy, pre-distressed shoes that look very similar to what a dad would mow the lawn in.
Okay, so that's fine, but it seems like there are people who don't know that they're wearing a trendy dad shoe versus those who want to pay $1,000 to appear to be wearing a trendy dad shoe, right?
Yeah, I mean, of course, this always happens where, like, you know, a similar thing I was thinking of is, like, you know, Patagonia fleece jackets becoming, popular, or Canada Goose down coats being popular. You know, obviously people have worn those for utilitarian purposes for quite some time. This is kind of a similar trajectory, I would say. But there are those kind of, for lack of a better term, suburban dads that, you know, are 50, 60, 70 years old that have been wearing Asics or New Balances or what have you for quite some time. And for them to kind of hear that these shoes are suddenly popular and certain models are selling for $500 on the resale market, that's a bit of a shock to them. I spoke to a good number of dads about this, and I was always interested to hear their kind of perspective on why this might be popular. They kind of, you know, they hit the nail on the head often that it's just a comfort thing, or it's just, you know, a functionality thing, which I think is part of it. But, you know, I think for people in fashion, there's a sense that by wearing the kind of most bland, most banal sneaker possible and making it look fashionable, that's an advanced maneuver, if you will. It's kind of a challenge to take on. But again, for those dads that have been standing by these brands for quite some time, they do see some humor in their shoe of choice being kind of popular and hyped up.
We're speaking with Jacob Gallagher, men's fashion columnist at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called "The Hot Shoe Right Now is Called a Dad Sneaker." Where'd the trend come from? Any way to identify it?
You know, it's hard to say. There is this kind of notion that it came from this movement of normcore that we've been in for, or that we've kind of seen for the past decade or so, where, you know, again, it was a notion of people in cities, you know, cool kids, for lack of a better term, adopting banal clothing, kind of mundane clothing, and finding a way to make it look cool. And that being kind of some kind of challenge or some kind of remove from the fashion industry with its hype cycle and its trend cycle. Of course, there's some irony there that as that has gone along, there have been a rise of trend of this. You know, these things that were once, you know, functional and once kind of seen as being normal, quote unquote, they now are trendy, and they're now on the same kind of trend cycle and cycle of innovation that, you know, hypier and kind of flashier fashion trends are. So you can see it in like Asics trying to now partner with, you know, certain cool fashion blogs or fashion brands and create, you know, different models and you know, reconfigure the colorways of the shoes that have been around for quite some time.
Even dads can be cool. We're all for that around here. That's Wall Street Journal fashion columnist Jacob Gallagher with our own Gordon Deal.
Why wait to save? Dell Technologies' Black Friday event arrives early with select deals on top tech to power business productivity. The savings start now with up to 48% off performance business PCs powered by 12th Gen Intel Core processors. Don't forget special pricing on the latest monitors, docks, and accessories, including free shipping on everything. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL for Black Friday deals. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Gordon's off. I'm Mike Gavin. Thanks for coming by on this Friday. Gordon will return on Monday. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Kashinka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
A federal judge in Texas has struck down the Biden administration's student debt forgiveness plan, threatening a plan that would have canceled up to $20,000 in student loans for tens of millions of borrowers. The judge called the plan an unconstitutional exercise of Congress's legislative power that failed to go through normal regulatory processes. The Justice Department is appealing.
Number two.
A Connecticut judge has ordered internet broadcaster Alex Jones to pay an additional $473 million in punitive damages for making defamatory claims that the Sandy Hook school massacre was a hoax. The judge imposed the penalty yesterday on top of a nearly $1 billion jury verdict last month. Eight families of those who died and an FBI agent sued Jones for defamation over the years of false statements he made about the shooting on his InfoWars platform.
Number three.
The Attorney General for the District of Columbia has filed a consumer protection lawsuit against the Washington Commanders and its owner Dan Snyder, as well as the NFL and Commissioner Roger Goodell, over the team and league's response to allegations that dozens of team employees had been sexually and verbally harassed. Carl Racine is seeking a court order forcing the NFL to release the findings of its investigation.
When news stories broke, Mr. Snyder falsely claimed he knew nothing about it. He did this in order to insulate himself from consequences, protect his image, and protect his profit.
The lawsuit adds to the numerous arenas where the Commanders are fighting legal battles. New owner Elon Musk says bankruptcy is a possibility for Twitter, adding to the chaos that has engulfed the social media platform in the 2 weeks since the billionaire took it over. Meanwhile, several Twitter users have begun exploiting the revamped Twitter Blue by receiving the blue checkmark and pretending to be celebrities or politicians. A deeply personal collection of love letters in which a teenage Bob Dylan tells his high school sweetheart that he envisions changing his name and selling a million records is going up for sale in Boston. The Minnesota boy, known then as Bob Zimmerman, wrote the 42 letters to Barbara Ann Hewitt between 1957 and 1959. The letters, to be auctioned by RR Auction, have never been made public before. They were discovered by Hewitt's daughter after her mother died in 2020 and will be offered together with a starting bid of $250,000.
Has anyone asked Bob Dylan about this?
And I guess they're not his property anymore.
I know. I'd be kind of embarrassed about this. Maybe, you know, scratch up the 250 grand and buy them yourself. That's what I would do probably if I was him.
I don't know. He predicted what was going to happen to him. Maybe he's not embarrassed.
All right. Well, yeah. We shall see. Thanks, Jen.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
As you go out into the world on Veterans Day, a little bit of history behind the day. Veterans Day is always on November 11th, since fighting during World War I stopped on November 11th, 1918, due to an armistice between the Germans and Allies. The day was originally commemorated as Armistice Day by President Woodrow Wilson in 2019. In 1938, Armistice Day became a legal public holiday. After many American soldiers lost their lives during World War II and the Korean War, Armistice Day was renamed Veterans Day in 1954. The date was briefly changed in the 1960s to the fourth Monday in October to create a three-day weekend, but President Gerald Ford signed a bill in 1975 returning it to November 11th. And by the way, it's Veterans Day with no apostrophes. According to the VA, no apostrophes are needed at the end of veterans because it's not a day that belongs to veterans, but rather a day for honoring all veterans. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka and Gordon Deal, I'm Mike Gavin. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.